Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1327, we feature stories by two new Life Rattle writers, Nathaniel Vole and Kira Weikart. I hope this Christmas night finds all of our listeners in a good place. In recognition of Christmas Day, both of tonight's stories offer us a peek at a Christmas from days gone by. Our first writer tonight, Nathaniel Vole, was born in 1993 in Kitchener, Ontario. He and his sister grew up in a sheltered suburban community, advancing through the local Catholic school system, camping every summer, and skiing every winter. In the year after he completed high school, Nathaniel became a father to a beautiful son, who, he says, looks far too much like his dad for his own good. Balancing work, school, and fatherhood, Nathaniel moved to Mississauga to follow his passion for acting. He goes home to see his loving family and his son as often as possible, and he loves his son to pieces. Nathaniel has written a very moving story. The story opens in a hospice where our narrator's grandmother is living out her last days. Though not truly a Christmas tale, at the heart of the story is a beautiful Christmas scene remembered from the narrator's childhood. I hesitated about featuring this story on tonight's show because it's not really a happy story. But after some reflection, I thought that Christmas, to so many, does not prove to be a happy day. For many, the high expectations of the season are simply unattainable. And for many, it's a time when we miss, terribly miss, our family members and friends who are no longer with us. There is such beauty and love at the heart of tonight's story, between a boy and his grandmother, that maybe this story, though, is quite perfect for Christmas. Let's listen now as Nathaniel Vole reads his story, Agnes Was, tonight on Life Rattle.
Agnes Was by Nathaniel Vole. Dad drives down the highway past hazy fields of corn, wheat, and soybeans with my sister Savannah and I in the car. The sun creeps under the horizon, splashing the wispy clouds with oranges and reds and purples and pinks. The car's automatic dashboard lights switch over to night mode. The headlights slice through the thick, foggy dusk. The first stars blink down and guard the farmers' fields. No one speaks. Dad pulls into the Sakura House Hospice parking lot, and we exit the car. Gravel crunches under my feet. We climb three stone porch steps up to the hospice's towering main entrance. I knock on the lofty French door. A man opens it. "Please, do come inside. We've been waiting for you." We step inside and exchange our street shoes for wool slippers. Dad leads us down a marble hallway. We pass two patient care rooms with name signs for Wilfred and Phyllis. Their doors remain closed. At the end of the hall, we arrive at the room for Agnes. I knock. We enter. "Hi, Grandma," Savannah says. Grandma's knobby, delicate fingers lift my bread out of the toaster. She spreads peanut butter and honey over both slices. Grandma never misses any spots, and folds them together. Then she trims the crusty edges and cuts my sandwich diagonally on my Peter Rabbit and Friends plastic plate. I lick saliva from the corners of my mouth. Grandma pivots carefully from her post at the counter and braves the three steps back to the table. Her all-white New Balance Velcro shoes squeak as her legs skid along the floor. She sits down in her kitchen chair, which has an extra cushion to support her fake hip. Grandma slides my plate across the laminated wooden kitchen table. "Thank you, Grandma," I sing. "You're welcome, sweetie." I nibble at my sandwich. Sometimes I take big bites because I'm excited, and then before I know it, it's all gone. Grandma picks up a pack of Uno cards. Uno, I scream. Grandma lies in her adjustable hospice bed. Her bones stick out like knives. Her skin gathers under her arms and slides around when she moves. Her milky eyes cannot focus. An IV tube bites into her thigh. "Help me," she gasps. My eyes water. Dad shuffles over to Grandpa. "Hey, Dad, any news from the doctors?" "Oh, well, the nurse just said that she'll have to change Agnes's catheter soon," Grandpa replies. "She's very similar to yesterday when you visited." He sighs and peers out the window. "The weather's been pretty good lately, though, eh?" Dad quickly changes the topic. "I drove back home yesterday after my visit, and I couldn't believe it. No more rain or that sleet stuff we had last week. I even got home in time to see the game." Grandpa turns back to Dad. "Oh yeah? What was the score?" "Oh, it was a blowout. We lost 5-2 or 5-3. What was it, Nathaniel?" 5-2, I say. "Help me." "Yeah, we were up 1-0 and we just went into a shell, you know? As if you can hold a 1-0 lead from the first period." "Help me." Grandma and Grandpa take their seats on the burgundy corduroy couch at Uncle Paul's house. Piles of gifts surround the Christmas tree and spill out into the living room beside them. Dad's side of the family gathers on the outskirts of the living room. The buzz of "How was your year?" and "Oh, I'm so glad that worked out for you," and "We're planning trips to Switzerland and China for later this year," and "Mommy, when is the cake coming?" and "Yup, yup, yup, the proposal went through and we'll be implementing next quarter," and "I have to pee," fills the crowded living room. My cousin Serena trots over to the couch and plunks herself down at Grandpa's feet. "Grandpa, you have to wear this Santa hat because you're the oldest and you look the most like Santa, and it's Christmas, and you're giving out the Christmas gifts, and..." "Thank you, Serena." Grandpa chuckles, grabs the hat, and places it on his head. "That's very kind of you." "There, is that better, Serena?" Grandma winks at Serena, and Serena giggles. Dad delivers the first gift from beside the tree to the couched people. "Wait," Grandma says, "we need to sing first." The buzz in the air quiets. My girl cousins smile and lift their chins. My boy cousins duck behind couches. "Can I start, Grandma?" I ask. "I know what song Grandma likes." "Sure, dear," my boy cousins snicker from behind the couches. "Pick whatever Christmas song you like." I smirk at my cousin Phil, his head popped up behind the sofa. He sinks back down. Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. My aunts and my girl cousins join in. My uncles infiltrate my boy cousins' hiding spots and pull them out by their ears and collars. I sing with my chest high. Grandma hums along. I grin at her. I sing for her. She looks at Serena. I inch over to Grandma, sit down in the bedside chair, and stroke her side. I glide my hand across her floral-printed cotton hospital pajamas, barely touching the fabric. "I love you, Grandma. You're going to be okay soon." My cheeks, chin, neck, and chest are wet with tears. "Don't worry. You'll be in a better place soon." Grandma looks up at me with murky, unfocused eyes. "Who are you?" "Grandma, it's me, Nathaniel." Her expression remains the same. "I'm Doug's son." "Oh, isn't that nice?" Thank you.
That was Agnes Was, written and read by Nathaniel Vohl. Tonight's second writer, Kira Weikart, grew up on the outskirts of Ottawa. Kira tells us that both sides of her family are mostly Germanic in origin, which really just means that she can recite the first two lines of O Tannenbaum with confidence. Her biggest feat as a child was her impressive collection of stickers, over 2,000, a hobby enthusiastically supported by her parents. The rest of her childhood consisted of make-believe, reading, and correcting the pronunciation of her name. Now that she's older, Kira's time is pretty much spent the same way. She is insistent that no one ever truly grows up, but perhaps that's born partly from her love of Disney movies and children's novels. After high school, Kira tired of the suburban life and moved to the equally suburban Mississauga. Kira Weikart currently studies theater and English. Kira brings us a fresh new story of a family Christmas, when both our narrator and her sister return to their family home for Christmas after moving out earlier that year to attend school. They find that the family traditions they hold dear do not simply fall into place with their new lifestyles. Let's listen now as Kira Weikart reads her story, Home for Christmas.
Home for Christmas by Kira Weikart. 2 days after I return home to Ottawa for Christmas break, snowflakes spiral outside. The backyard snuggles under a thick white blanket, and the tree branches sag from the weight of the snow. Inside, the evergreen tree stands proudly garnished with Mom's elegant ornaments and a few tacky gift ones that my sister Emma and I snuck on. Mom hums along to her endless playlist of Christmas songs as she threads little wire hooks through her new set of red and gold ornaments. I turn to Mom. How is this still on your playlist? This isn't a Christmas song. It's about Jesus. I sing along. What if Jesus comes back like that, 2 months early and hooked on crack? Emma snorts, and Mom cracks a smile before recovering her stern expression. It's on a Christmas album. It's a Christmas classic. Just because the song mentions Jesus does not make it a Christmas song. Next, you'll be saying Jesus Take the Wheel is a classic song, too. Well, I think it's a lovely song. Mom concentrates on the ornaments, and Emma rolls her eyes. I grin and reach for a ball. Wait, wait! Mom snatches it from my hand and places it back on the table. She places the ornaments into two small piles, and then hands one each to Emma and me. Even though Emma and I both moved out the previous September, Emma moved a 20-minute car ride away to downtown Ottawa, and I moved a 5-hour car ride away to suburban Mississauga, Mom still evenly divides the differently colored ornaments between us. I swirl a candy cane in my hot chocolate. The poor tree creaks with effort, yet it still looks empty. I stare at the tree, then whirl on Mom. Where's the chocolate? Hmm? Mom's attention doesn't waver from the little hook in her hand. The chocolate ornaments. You know, the Santas and the bells. Oh, those? I figured we didn't need them this year. Emma pipes up. What? But we always have those. Well, you never eat them. It's just a waste. I scrunch my nose at Emma, and she pokes her tongue at me. I pick up 3 small gold balls and turn to place them. As I position the last ball, it crashes to the ground. I squeak and shoot a horrified look at Emma. She snorts and flaunts her unbroken ornament at me. That's the 2nd one you've broken today. Mom raises her eyebrows. Just clean it up. I grumble and haul the vacuum from the front closet to the living room. I struggle and slam the base into the wall. I freeze. Mom looks over, her reading glasses perched on the bridge of her nose. Emma mimics her look and I giggle. Emma echoes my laughter, and Mom smiles. You girls are just ridiculous. The tree decorating continues. Emma places each of her ornaments wherever she wants, and I move each of her ornaments to a place I prefer. We are warbling with Michael Bublé to White Christmas when Dad wanders in. Emma and I dance, twirl, prance, and sashay over to him, caroling loud enough to entertain the neighbors. Knobs. Dad tries to swat Emma, but she leaps away and he heads into the kitchen. Hey, I was thinking that we should get that new James Bond movie when it comes out on DVD. Emma stops singing. Oh, have you seen it? My eyes dart between Emma and Dad. I busy myself with more ornaments. Dad opens the fridge and pulls out some leftover lasagna. Yeah, your mom, Kira, and I went last night. My hand hovers between the prickly branches. Mom's hand clenches around her little hook. Dad's hand gropes in the open fridge. Emma's mouth presses into a thin line. You went without me? Dad closes the fridge door and puts his lasagna in the microwave. We figured you were busy at work. Besides, you're all the way downtown now. Well, you could have come to a theater near my apartment. I gently hang the picture of Emma and me, framed by a plastic golden tree. We gave it to Mom last Christmas. Mom cuts in. Why would we drive all the way downtown when there's a theater right by us? Emma glowers at her. Maybe so we could have all gone together? I lean over the final box of decorations. It's empty. The microwave beeps, but Dad ignores it. That's ridiculous. You can't expect us to come to you. Emma balls her fists. Wow. Okay. I plop down on the couch beside Mom. She leaps up. You can't seriously be angry about this. Can we not see a movie without you? You didn't even bother inviting me. I tug the red, furry blanket off the back of the couch. I pull it up to my chin. Dad's voice rises. You wouldn't have even been able to come. I could have bussed down. Mom gives a sharp laugh. You wouldn't have bussed all the way down. You know that. I might have, though. I would have. Their voices grow louder. I pick up the diviners from the coffee table and open to my bookmark. I stare at chapter 29. Mom's, Dad's, and Emma's voices blend together like the words on the page. The evening had started so well.
That was Home for Christmas, written and read by Kira Weikart. This concludes Life Rattle number 1327. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Nathaniel Voll and Kira Weikart reading their stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Everyone here at Life Rattle extends our best wishes to you all for a safe and happy holiday season. Tune in next year for our first Life Rattle Classic program of 2015, hosted by Virginia Ashbury.